this morning I was talking about this, and I was talking about when we were little kids and we played the game Follow the Leader. But it's almost like, you know, you get to that place, maybe you're at a place and you're like, hey, we're going to go to my house. And you've never been to my house, so I say, just follow me. Like, pretend like we don't have navigation. Like, it used to be that we couldn't just open our phones and figure out where to go. We'd have to, like, get map guides out, or we just have to, like, call someone on a phone, a rotary phone, like a phone, and then they'd give us, like, directions, and we'd have to write the directions down, and then you would take the directions with you, and you'd follow. Now it takes me, like, we've lived here for how long? 2 months? 2 months. And I said, we're driving home today, and I said, Amber, aren't you proud of me? I'm like going home without navigation today. And we've been doing the drive for 2 months now. But we get so dependent upon that navigation that we can't figure out how to get anywhere. But like in the old days, I'd say, hey, why don't you guys come to my house? And you'd be like, okay. And I'm like, follow me. And I would get in my car, you'd get in your car, and you would have to make a conscious decision to think, I'm going to turn where he turns. I'm going to go where he goes. You couldn't say, well, I want to go to your house, but I'm going to go my way, if you didn't know how to get there. And often we have that kind of an attitude with Jesus of like, yeah, I want to go where you want me to go, but I don't want to go your way. Because your way isn't my way. I want to do it my way. I want to go my way. And I think the thing that we need to sort of come to terms with is that you can't say I'm following Jesus and do it your way. You can't be Frank Sinatra, I did it my way. You've got to say I'm going to follow the Jesus way. And so this evening I want to talk about, what does it really mean to follow someone? What does it mean to follow Jesus? You know, Jesus says in the Gospels, you hear Jesus, like, I think it's over 20 times that he says, or he commands guys to follow him. He says, follow me. You know, the well-worn one in Matthew chapter 4, verse 18 and 19, it says, while walking by the Sea of Galilee, he saw two brothers, Simon, who's called Peter, and Andrew, his brother, casting a net into the sea, for they were fishermen. And he said to them, follow me, and I'll make you fishers of men. And when we begin to follow Jesus, he forms us into who he wants us to be. He takes who we were, and he reshapes us and reforms us. He resets our priorities. A lot of us have priorities and things that we want to get done and we want to accomplish and places that we want to go and things that we want to have. And Jesus comes and says, hey, I know you've got your plan. I know you've got your desire. I know you've got the things that you want to do or be or say, but he's saying, if you want to follow me, you have to go where I'm going to lead you. And we have to get to that place where we're really willing to say, like, Jesus, wherever you take me, wherever you want me to go, even if it's sometimes a place we don't want to go. You think about the instruction from Jesus, you think about it, it's a pretty bold command. It's a pretty strong command for someone to come and say, hey, follow me. But Jesus does it, and he says it. And I'm talking about like, you know, like, in that day and age, it was a very different kind of culture. Our culture is, you know, I want to do it my way. I want what I want. I want to live the way I want to live. And then on top of that, I want to layer that with, I'm a Christian. And I was thinking about, if Jesus were to come today, and the way our culture is, and the way we've been trained, because most of us have been trained to be independent. We even from a very young age, we're trained to be independent, to be able to do things on our own. I was actually thinking about it when I was putting my shoes on to come here tonight. And I was tying my shoes, and I was doing it so quickly and without thinking. And I'm like, And all of a sudden the thought crossed my mind. There was a time when I had to learn how to tie my shoes. Like there was a time when that was a hard, that was a difficult task. Well, I've been doing it for a long time. Now I can do it pretty good. So you don't have to worry about me. But we are trained from a very early age to be independent. We're trained from an early age to like, you know, I mean, don't tell me what to do. Don't tell me what to do. Don't tell me what to wear. Don't tell me how to act. We live in a culture that has become even more and more, free to rebel. Like it feels like now it's normal to see protests every single day. Protesting law enforcement, protesting government, protesting leadership, protesting—you know—they're going to protest everything. And we, our culture is increasingly becoming anti-authority. In fact, you can watch like on the news stations. There's a visceral disdain and disregard and hatred for authority. And those are the news stations, and it's so far away from who Jesus was. Even Jesus in a Roman context, where it was the Roman Empire was brutal, it was brutal. Even Jesus said, "Hey, submit to your authorities," or the Bible tells us submit to authority. And so here's Jesus. He comes along. He sees these guys. They're out there fishing. I'm sure at this point they've heard of Jesus. They know who he is. They've heard kind of the folklore around him. He's this guy who's coming along and he's kind of making a splash there. And he comes along and he sees these guys fishing and he says, "Hey, come and follow me and I'll make you fishers of men." And in this, I mean, I can only imagine Jesus trying to do that today. Like, can you imagine? Like, can you imagine Jesus pulls into the gas station and he asks the guy behind the counter, he says, "Hey, come and follow me. And I'll make you a cashier of men," whatever. And it would be like, people would be like, "You're crazy." I said, if Jesus had to come today, "Come and follow me" would probably have to sound something like, "Hey, if it's okay with you and it doesn't violate your identity or it isn't offensive to you, to your sensitivities, would you consent to follow me as long as I don't lead you in a way that you don't want to go?" That's what Jesus might have to say today. Because if he said, "Come and follow me," the news would, it'd be all over the news. Can you believe this guy is telling people how to behave, how to think? He's telling them how to identify. But Jesus came into a very different culture. He came into a Hebraic culture. He came into a rabbinical culture where it was the highest honor to have a rabbi say, "Come and follow me." It was a high honor because young men from a very early age would have been preparing themselves for years for that call. A young man, probably by the time he's five or so, is learning how, he's memorizing the Torah. The first five books of the Bible, he's memorizing them word for word. By the time he's probably 13 and 14, he studied the Mosaic law. He studied theology. He studied the Hebrew text. He's well versed in theological thinking, and he would go and he would apply to follow the rabbi, to be a part of a yeshiva, and he would go and he'd make his application and he'd say, I want to follow you. And then he would be tested. He would be quizzed. He'd have to pass a test. And it was rigorous and it was difficult. And not just anyone made it. Only the best of the best made it. And here's Jesus coming to uneducated fishermen. and saying, hey, I'm going to be your rabbi. I'm going to, and here you've got the rabbi of rabbis. You've got Jesus. He's not just a wise man. He's not just a learned man. He's not just a good man. He's actually an anointed man with authority. And so he's coming to these uneducated fishermen and saying, come follow me. And it was the highest of high honors. And the craziest part about it is he's come and said the same thing to us. He's come and said the same thing to us. He's saying, come and follow me. Come and do what I do. Come and be like me. In Matthew chapter 10, verses 38 and 39. This is kind of fun because I've got it on the screen back there, so I don't have to look down at my computer. I can look at there and read it. And it says, whoever does not take his cross and follow me is not worthy of me. Whoever finds his life will lose it, and whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. And we read that and we think, oh yeah, take up my cross and follow Jesus. We even sing songs. If any man come after me, remember that song? Who, Randy, no? He said, pick up your cross and follow Jesus. And we hear that phrase and we almost become like a little bit desensitized to what actually Jesus is saying there. What Jesus is actually saying there is like horrific. It is terrifying what he's actually saying. If you don't take up your cross and follow me, you're not worthy of me. Because the cross, the crucifixion, was actually a terrifying symbol in that culture. The Romans used it as an instrument of terror to scare the people, to oppress the people into following the rules. They reserved the crucifixion for slaves, rebels, insurrectionists, and the lowest criminals. It wasn't merely designed to like, okay, well, this guy got out of line. He broke the law. We're going to kill him. It wasn't just that. It was, can you imagine living in a culture where you could be convicted of a crime? And it could have been a minor offense. It could have been that you stepped on the wrong guy's toes, or it could have been a very small thing. And they say, okay, well, we're going to crucify you. And crucifixion was, I mean, we've all heard about, I don't know if you've all watched The Passion of the Christ, but horrific, horrific way to die. And the Romans used that way of crucifying or of killing someone of capital punishment as a way to keep people in line. So they made it as bad as it could possibly be. They say, you know, you are beaten beyond recognition. It's a terrible, terrible thing to die. And so Jesus is saying, and whoever does not take up his crucifixion, basically, whoever doesn't like sign up and volunteer and agree to be crucified and follow me is not worthy of me. It's actually quite astounding for Jesus to say that. He says it in Luke 9:23, if anyone would come after me, let him deny himself and pick up his cross daily and follow me. It's a daily decision of like, I'm willing to allow God to kill the worst parts of me. So it was more than just a piece of jewelry. They wouldn't have thought when he said, pick up your cross, pick up all your cross necklace and fall. No, they would have known he's talking about, this is actually, you, if you want to follow me, you got to be willing to die. Because Jesus knew, and this is beginning, the beginning of his ministry, but he knew where he was going. He knew that in 3 years he was going to be crucified. He knew that the road he was on and that he was inviting his disciples to join him on was the road to crucifixion. It was the road to death. And so it wasn't a light, easy, you know, yippee-ki-yay kind of call. It was a come and die. Jesus, I think the church can get very confused by some of the messages that are being preached now, by some of the predominant messages in the church that have come through, and their messages like, you know, live your best life. If you want, you know, if come and be a Christian so you can live your best life, or, you know, you do you, or find your bliss, or follow your dreams, those kinds of things, those kinds of preaches that people love to hear. Those churches are jam-packed on a Sunday with multiple services, with tens of thousands of people who are going and they're being told that following Jesus is the ticket to a great life, to a prosperous life, to an abundant life. And it's true, it's just not in the way that they're saying it. It's true that that following Jesus is a ticket to an abundant life, but not in the way that they're saying it is. Because the abundant life comes when my life ends and his life begins in me. And so we have to realize that the gospel is very uncomfortable. This message tonight, it's not a comfortable message. For those of you who are sitting through it a second time, it's not, you know, sorry, it's not a comfortable message. It's meant to make us uncomfortable. It's meant to upend every aspect of our lives. Because in 1 Corinthians chapter 6, it says, do you not know that your body is a temple of the Holy Spirit within you, whom you have from God? He says, you are not your own, for you were bought with a price. So glorify God in your body. I think we can get confused with the idea of, well, it's my life. You know, like Bon Jovi, it's my life. Aaron knows what I'm talking about. And I'm going to live it my way. And it's like, and Paul's saying in Corinthians, no, you're not your own. It's not your life. Your life was bought and paid for. You know, I told you guys last week, or maybe 2 weeks ago, last week, I told you my brother passed away. I think it was since his landlord friend found him, and his landlord was obviously a really nice man, a good man. And my brother didn't have money, so he had a car and he had a Harley. And the landlord said, okay, sell me your car and you can just apply it towards your rent. Like when you won't have to pay rent until the price of the car. And then the Harley, same thing. Sell me your Harley and it's worth X. So you don't have to pay rent until that money's gone. And you think, okay, that seems like a, you know, nice, fair deal. But the landlord didn't do that. He said, okay, I'll pay for your car, but you can keep driving it. I'll pay for your motorcycle, but you can keep driving it. Just give me a pink slip. You register it. You insure it. You drive it. You keep it. But it really belongs to me. And I think that's what Jesus does. He's like, okay, give me the pink slip, Randy, to Randy. That's my body now. I own it. I have the pink slip. I've got the papers. But you get to use it. But it's not yours anymore. It's mine. It belongs to me. And I think when Jesus says, hey, come and follow me, he's saying, hey, like, if you're going to follow me, it's you're mine now. we don't have the option to say, you know, like I said with my illustration of like, I don't have the, if you're following me to my house, if I go left and you go right, you're not going to get there. And when we're following Jesus, if he says, hey, we're going left, and you say, well, I'm going right, you're not going to get there. And too often we get into this place of thinking we can follow Jesus and do it our way, do it our own way, go our own way. And we don't even realize. We wake up one day and we realize I'm not following Jesus. Somewhere along the way, I lost him. I can't find him. I don't know which way he went. And now I've got to try to make a conscious decision. Like, okay, now I got to go find him because I'm trying to get somewhere that he's trying to lead me. So what does it mean to follow Jesus? What does it really take to follow Jesus? What does it mean? How do we know if we're following Jesus or we're going our own way? The first thing we have to have is we have to have absolute trust. Sorry. You have to trust me. If I say, hey, follow me in my house, you got to trust that I know where I'm going. You have to take every turn, even if I'm taking turns that don't make sense, even if it feels like I'm going in a circle, you have to trust that I know where I'm going. Remember back in Matthew where he says to the fishermen, he says, follow me and I'll make you fishers of men. It says that immediately they left their nets. It wasn't a delayed reaction. And sometimes I think we say to Jesus, like, you know, Jesus, I'm going to follow you, but I got some other things to do first. There's different people when they would come to Jesus, and say, what must I do to follow you? And he says, okay, go and, you know, but I want to follow you, Jesus, but first I want to go bury my father. And that didn't mean his father was dead. It may have meant that, hey, I'm going to go wait for my father to die. He might die next month, next week, next year, whatever. And when he does that, and like in some ways probably wanting to honor his father, but we'll see later in scripture where we got to put Jesus first. But he says, let me go do that first. And Jesus says, you're not worthy to follow me. You let the dead bury the dead. Come and follow me now. And it says, so these fishermen said, it says immediately they followed him. Immediately they went where he went. They left their nets. They left safety. They left security. They left familiarity. They left their livelihood. They left their families and said, we will follow you. There's a story of a Zulu warrior, Zulu king named Shaka, and he wanted to know if his men were going to be loyal to him and follow him. So this is legend. I don't know if it's actually true, but it's legend that he marched them to the edge of a very high cliff, and he told, and legend is that they walked off. They started to walk off the edge one by one because they told him to. To their certain death. And eventually he stopped him after, you know, a number of them had fallen. He stopped him and said, okay, now I know you'll follow me. Now I know you'll be loyal. And I think that's something of what Jesus is saying in some way too, is like, pick up your cross. Are you willing to go to the place where you're willing to give your life to follow Jesus? And I don't think it's necessarily we're talking about my physical body, but I'm talking about my mind, will, and emotions. Do they belong to Jesus? Remember in 10:38, he says, anyone who doesn't take his cross and follow me is not worthy of me. So we have to put our absolute trust in Jesus. That Jesus, wherever you lead me, even if it doesn't make sense to me, even if it's absolutely insane, wherever you lead me, I'm going to follow you. I'm going to trust Jesus that you're going to lead me where I need to go. The Bible says that a man makes his plans, but the Lord establishes his steps. We have to put our absolute trust in him, because again, there's going to be times when Jesus is going to say, hey, you need to go this way or you need to go that way. There are times when Jesus is going to say, you know that house you really love? You need to sell it. What? What? Why? Just trust me. You need to sell it. And you may not know, like we have some good friends that have, like, they've said, hey, we felt like the Lord told us to sell our house. And then the real estate market crashed. We can trust him. We had other friends, we felt like the Lord told us to sell our house because we feel like God's going to be moving us. And sure enough, they sold their house and God moved them. So there's times when when God's going to come and say, hey, follow me, looks like this. And you're going to say, that does not make sense. That doesn't make sense on paper. And it's like, are we willing to say, even when it doesn't make sense, even when I don't understand, even when I think I know better, I'm going to trust you. Following him also looks like absolute. So it's absolute trust and absolute surrender. I was talking to Ruben a while ago about one of my favorite authors is Andrew Murray. He was a Scottish guy who had ministry in South Africa, and he was part of a big revival there. And he wrote a book called Absolute Surrender. It's one of my kind of well-worn books that I go back and read every couple of years because it's so rich. If you want to read some really good stuff, go read those old guys because that stuff's rich. But he said this, he says, there's but one thing God asks of us, and that is absolute surrender to him. It's not partial surrender. It's not when I feel like it, or it's absolute surrender. That means I'm absolutely surrendering what I think, what I want, what I desire. I'm giving it to him. It's surrendering. It's leaving my root for his root. Remember, we're not our own. It's not our. Like we again. I don't own the pink slip to myself anymore. At any time, that landlord could have gone to my brother and said, okay, I'm going to take that car now. And my brother could have said, no, you can't take it. And he said, but I've got the pink slip. That car belongs to me. You can't do anything about it. And it's like, again, God's saying, man, are you going to surrender to me? Are you going to follow me? Are you going to do what I say? Are you going to do what I'm asking you to do? And that's what it means to follow Jesus. It means absolute commitment. I can't say I follow Jesus and follow him half-heartedly. I can't say I follow him and only follow him partially or sometimes or when I like where he's leading me. He's the leader, whether you like it or not. And the truth is that there's times when we don't like it. There's times when God's going to come to you and say, hey, I want you to do this, and you don't like it. He's going to say, hey, I need you to move from there to there. And there's really nice. And there's something we just have to say, God, whatever you say. There's a great song, that was in my head as I was preparing this preach. And it says, where you go, I go. Where you say, what you say, I say. What you pray, I pray. Jesus only did what he saw you do. He would only say what he heard you speak. He would only move when he felt you lead. And the reason Jesus can come to us and emphatically say, follow me, is because he was following God. He was following the Father. Jesus said repeatedly, I only do that which I see my Father doing. I only say that which I hear my Father speaking. Jesus wasn't coming to us and saying, hey, pick up your cross and go to your crucifixion. Like, Alyssa, I want you to pick up your cross and you go and die. Well, I stay over here and do my, you know, like, and because I'm Jesus, I can't, you know, I can't die. You got to go. When he said, follow me, he said he knew he was willing to go. He was willing to pick up his cross. And he didn't even sin. He didn't need to die. He died for us. So Jesus doesn't call us to do something he wouldn't do. And so we have to be absolutely committed to saying, man, Jesus, wherever you want me to go, whatever you want me to do, my life is not my own. I'm committed. I'm all in. I'm not like kind of partially in. I'm not in on a Sunday, but out on a Monday. I'm not in on a Wednesday for my community. I'm not in, you know, for an hour in the morning, and then I go about my business and go about my day and kind of leave Jesus in the quiet place. And I'm all in all the time. I'm in the grocery store and Jesus says, hey, go and pray for that person, or go talk to that person about Jesus. Yesterday I was on a phone call with someone. And I was around the block from home, and I didn't want to go home until I finished my phone call, because there was someone at our house and I thought, I want to finish my phone call. So I pull over, and this has happened to me a number of times. I don't know if it's a South Carolina thing or if it's, you know, I look shady. But I'm sitting in my car, and it's not like a creepy stalker van or anything like that. I'm sitting in my normal car. I'm on my phone. I actually had my windows down at the time. So obviously I was on a phone call, and I wasn't parked directly in front of this lady's house. I was kind of parked a little bit past it, but I'm on the phone and I'm talking. And then all of a sudden the lady goes, do you need something? And I was like, no, I'm on the phone with a friend. I'm just trying to finish a phone call. And I had to, at that moment, I thought, I wanted to say, hey, lady, mind your business. You know, I'm not breaking any laws here. I'm on a phone call. Leave me alone. Because I've had this happen before. And I had to take a moment and say, actually, I want to be Jesus to this lady. And so she came over. So she was over there, and I said, I just live around the corner. I'm just finishing up a phone call. And she said, actually, I'm a little bit shaken up. I work at the mall. I work at Macy's, and there was a shooting there today. So I'm a little bit sketched out, and here's a guy parked in front of my house, and I was a little nervous. And I said, I'm so sorry that happened to you. What's your name? You know, she told me your name. I said, actually, I'm a pastor, and I'm on a phone call, and what church are you in? We're at this church. I'm like, you should come to church. She said she works at this time. But at that moment, I had to be like, okay, I'm not my own. I'm representing Jesus. What if I had kind of been rude to her, and then, you know, at some point she turns a corner and there's a bunch of people coming to our house for like a Bible study or something like that. It's like, I'm not my own. I've got to be a follower of Christ all the time. Another part of following Jesus is that it's a pick up your cross, which means we have to die all the way. We die daily. He said, you pick up your cross daily. There's a lot of times when we can kind of lose sight of that, and we think, well, what about what I want? What about what I need? What about my rights? What about what I'm entitled to? Man, I've been a good, you know, I've been good all this time. Aren't I entitled to have fun, or aren't I entitled to have the things that I want? And there's times when the Lord's going to say, it doesn't matter what you want. It matters what I want. It matters what I want for you. And it's not because it's not because God's trying to make your life miserable. It's because he knows where you're going. He knows how to lead you. And ultimately that's what Jesus did. He led those disciples, and it meant that they were being led to the end of their lives. Back in Matthew chapter 10, it says, whoever finds his life will lose it, and whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. When we're actually really, really willing to say, hey, it doesn't matter what I want, Lord. It doesn't matter what I think is best. When we're actually willing to say, Lord, you want to clean out my bank account, clean it out. You want to take the house away, take the house away. You want to take my health, take my health. You want to take my family, take my family. Because I'm only about following Jesus. I mean, we don't want that. We're hoping that that's not the way it's going to work out. But the reality is sometimes God is, sometimes he's going to lead us into places that feel really tragic and feel really difficult. But we follow him because he's worthy to be followed. We follow him because we can trust him. We follow him because we know he knows what he's doing and where he's going. And we follow him because at some point, at the end, we are gonna be in heaven with him. We are gonna be in his presence. And then all the stuff that we have struggled through is gonna be like, why was I struggling with that? Why was I attached to that stuff? Why did that stuff didn't matter? None of the stuff you're dealing with right now. Like, think about your biggest problem that you have right now. When we get there, it's not going to matter. What's going to matter is, did I follow him? So I want to land with a kind of a chunky portion of scripture in Luke chapter 14. In my Bible, the title of this section was called The Cost of Discipleship. It says, now great crowds accompanied him, and he turned and said to them, if anyone comes after me. This is a tough portion of scripture, I got to be honest. This is not an easy portion of scripture for me to like get my head around. He said, if anyone comes to me and does not hate his own father and mother and wife and children and brothers and sisters, yes, and even his own life, he cannot be my disciple. I mean, seriously? And the way I've heard that described and explained is, what Jesus is really saying there, if anyone comes to me and does not hate, and that what he means there is, in comparison for your love for me. Like, compared to how much I love you, this doesn't even compare. This isn't even close. How I feel about my family, if it comes down to it, and there are times when we'll make these decisions. There are times when we make the decision of like, okay, am I going to follow my parents or am I going to follow Jesus? Am I going to, there have been times in our lives where we've had to say to our kids when it's like, hey, we're going to miss you. And we love you. And man, we wish we could be in the same place as you, but following Jesus means we have to go there. And the way we follow him, it has to be that we have to get to that place where like, I don't care what it costs me. If he marches me to the edge of the cliff and he wants me to go, then I'll do it. And there will be times when it feels just like that. He says, whoever does not bear his own cross and come after me cannot be my disciple. That feels pretty emphatic. That feels pretty like, I don't know how you weasel out of that. I don't think he's giving us a lot of like wiggle room where it comes to that. He says, whoever does not bear his own cross and come after me cannot be my disciple. He doesn't say, well, whoever may not be my disciple or probably isn't my disciple. He says, you can't be his disciple. He says, for which of you desiring to build a tower does not first sit down and count the cost, whether he has enough to complete it. Otherwise, when he has laid a foundation and is not able to finish, all who see it begin to mock him, saying, this man began to build and was not able to finish. Or what king going out to encounter another king in war will not first sit down and deliberate whether he is able with 10,000 to meet him who comes against him with 20,000? And if not, while the other is a great way off, he sends a delegation and asks for terms of peace. I think for some of us, and I'm in this boat for sure, we didn't know what we were getting into when we said yes to Jesus. For many of us, and I'm not sure if it's even possible to do what the scripture is saying here as far as like counting the cost of what it means to follow Jesus. Cheryl, did you know when you said, yeah, I mean, I was 13. I was in church on a Sunday. I didn't know what I was saying yes to. No idea, none whatsoever. I was like young and dumb. Now I'm old and dumb. But it's like, I didn't know what I was getting into. And I don't know. I don't know if I would have had the courage. If I really understood this, then I don't know if I would have the courage to say, okay, yeah, I'll follow you, Jesus. Knowing that it meant my life's not my own. Now I could say, yeah, I think I would have. I hope I would have. But we don't know. And then he says, so therefore, any one of you who does not renounce all that he has cannot be my disciple. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? All that I have, I got to renounce it if I want to be his disciple. But man, I got to tell you, I did make that decision all those years ago. And to the best of my ability, I've tried to follow him and do what he says. To the best of my ability, I have been far from perfect, I haven't been the best, but man, I wouldn't trade it. I wouldn't go back to that 13-year-old kid and say, don't do it. Go live your best life now. Because I've watched others who said no. And I've watched where their lives have ended. And even as difficult it is to say this, even my brother, who he was 3 years older than me, we had a lot of siblings, and most of us at one point or another made a decision for Christ, and so he was exposed to the gospel, and he had chance after chance after chance to give his heart to Jesus and give his life to Jesus and to say, yes, I'll follow you, and he chose not to. And I watched his life. He didn't have a good life. He didn't have an easy life. He didn't have he ended up living alone in a not so beautiful place. And I'd be hard pressed to think that he's with Jesus right now. And as hard, as painful as that is for me to have to think about and to admit, man, he had the choice. It was his choice that he made to not follow Jesus. And man, I want to be one of the ones. I want to be one of the ones that Jesus says, come on in. Come on in. I want to be one of the ones that say, he says, that's one of my disciples. But I can't, that's not going to happen. If I don't follow him, if I don't pick up my cross and follow him. So I feel like the Lord's wanting to, I felt like this message this evening was really more of a reminder to us of what we signed up for. And it was a reminder that this isn't a hobby for us. This isn't a part-time kind of when I feel like it. It's an all or nothing kind of situation. And I, you know, Jesus is worth an all or nothing situation. He's worth everything. He's worth all that we have and more.